Good morning to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Welcome here. this is our third, fourth attempt at an intro. John just being silly and making me laugh. It is Thursday morning. We recorded this on Monday with Craig Morgan, who is the guy for Arizona hockey and now Utah hockey. We talked about just what went wrong in Arizona, the transition, the roster, the X's and O's, all the stuff. He's an insider. He's smart. He knows everything. But John, what do you think of the interview?
I loved it. You know me. I hate on Arizona as much as the next guy, probably more. So it was nice to speak to somebody who knows. He's been around since 2000, since, you know, their first 3 years where they were really the honeymoon period. Pretty much he was around when it started to go bad, when they relocated to Glendale, the bankruptcy, the team ownership, the NHL ownership, the subsequent shifting of Morello, all this, the dangling of the carrots to everybody. We got an arena. We got this. We got that. Oh, no, we don't. Psych, nothing. So he was around all of this, and he was talking to everybody. He's talking to Bettman. He's talking to the GM. He's talking to the owner. He knows about this situation more than anybody. So it was very fun to talk to him for a good 40 minutes of just what went wrong? Why? Tell me about the players. He was talking about how the players, it really affected them. So I loved it. I really did love this interview. It was great for me.
Yeah, and I will say, as a New Englander, I've driven through Arizona once. I have no sense for the geography of it, the cities, Phoenix, whatever. And when you guys talk about Phoenix, then Glendale, then Scottsdale, then Tempe, I don't have, it means nothing to me. I know it's generally the greater metropolitan area. They're all kind of near each other, but like the differences of one to another, like most people who haven't been there, it's just names. They're just names on a map. I don't really get the differences, which makes it confusing when you talk about one versus another. And it's hard to follow sometimes. It's one of the things that I think other fans have been frustrated at in the last couple of years is like, just figure it out. Like, why are we talking about all these different cities? So we get into all of that. It was great. But before we do, this episode was brought to you by Bet365, the proud partner of Dropping the Gloves. Open an account with Bet365 today and bet on a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Use code HOCKEYCA. Without further ado, here's Craig Morgan.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Tim Wurzberger here, and we're joined by insider, all-city network superstar Craig Morgan, former Arizona Coyotes insider, current Arizona Cardinals supporter, broadcaster, all thing Arizona sports. Craig Morgan, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So, Craig, we had you on, and it's a controversial issue here on Dropping the Gloves because I, like we were talking about before we pressed the record button, I played for Arizona. I don't know if you were there when I was there. I'm assuming you were, 2015 and 16. A lot of the people shied away from the team during that time. Better things going on. The Diamondbacks were playing pretty good. The Cardinals, Larry Fitzgerald, very exciting. I know a little bit about the Arizona Coyotes, but I've been a huge naysayer. I've been a guy who said they should have got it to Arizona years and years ago. I'm not a fan of how that whole organization was run. And I've got some pushback on that. And I figured we'd get you on the show. You're the expert. You're the insider. You know everything there is to know about the Arizona Coyotes, the former NHL franchise. So we wanted to have you on. And first, just talk about, what do you do now? Arizona's gone. Do you follow them to Utah? Are you still involved with the team?
I am a little bit, oddly. I didn't expect to. After the Coyotes left, had some meetings with my bosses, and we decided that the best fit for me was to go cover the National Football League and the Cardinals here. So that is still my main job, and I'm also going to serve as a columnist for the other beats, the other teams in the city. But a little ways into the relocation for Utah, I got a call. Actually, I spoke to GM Bill Armstrong, and we discussed the idea of me still covering the team in some form. Now, I'm not going to be on the ground in Utah. Obviously, I can't be. I got to cover the NFL. I got to be a columnist here. This is my primary job. But they like the idea of me keeping contact, sort of more like a national writer would from afar, writing features, keeping up on the team. So we're going to continue to do that a little bit at All City Network. You know, that work will appear on our national site. My Arizona work will still appear on PHNX Sports. So it's going to be a busy time, but I'm actually looking forward to being able to keep tabs on the team a little bit because, as you may know, covering hockey is my passion. It's been my love. I grew up around the game, so happy to keep a little taste of it still.
Well, I want to go back to the inception of the Coyotes. They obviously were relocated from the Winnipeg Jets in 1990. Gosh, we said it before. 96, I believe, they came over, was their first season. Pretty successful early on. Played downtown in the Phoenix Suns Arena. Very good. Not a hockey arena per se, but sold out. Very fun, successful, making some money. Really good transition for a first couple of years. I think the problem came, Craig, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, is when they went for that new arena. That new hockey arena, I think they switched ownership at that time. They went with Elman, a real estate broker. He paired up with Wayne Gretzky. And instead of really pushing for a place where people live, Scottsdale, Phoenix, that sort of area, they decided to go with the idea, much like Ottawa did in Kanata. All these big developers think we could put a rink somewhere and then the people will come. You'll have an entertainment district. The Arizona Cardinals play there now and people will go there. It'll be an event. That's what they wanted to do with Glendale. They put the rink there, entertainment district followed up 2 years later. But even from my experience playing in Glendale, and I have friends and family who live in the Phoenix area, the greater Phoenix area, it's a heck of a drive to get out there. And there's traffic and it's just not easy to get out there from, you know, Phoenix, Scottsdale on game day to make it there without sitting in traffic for an hour. If they would have put it in Phoenix or Scottsdale, this could have been a completely different conversation potentially. But do you think that first decision by that second owner at the time, Elman, putting the rink in Glendale was just the nail in the coffin as early as it was for the Arizona Coyotes?
Yeah, I call that the original sin for the Coyotes. They were still actually in negotiations with the Scottsdale City Council. That wasn't dead yet, to build the arena at the site of the old Los Arcos Mall. And that, as you correctly stated, is that's an optimal location. Look, I know a lot of people don't understand Arizona geography. The population base, the wealth base, the corporate base of the city is all on the east side. It's like by a 2-to-1 margin. It's massive. Yeah. That's where the season ticket base of the Coyotes was, especially the premium season ticket holders, the people that buy suites and the more expensive tickets. That matters in the NHL because no league is more dependent on arena revenues than the NHL because it doesn't have the massive TV rights deal. So they go west and they're looking, and I get what their thinking was. They were looking at this as a new growth area of the city. At the time, it looked like the West Valley was booming. Then the recession hits. It never happened. If you look at the original plans, even for Westgate and what that entertainment district was supposed to be, it's a tiny fraction of what it was supposed to be. So it was never realized. You're right. It was impossible to get out there. And I've had fans push back in other cities saying, well, you know, I drive an hour and a half to go to games. People just behave differently here. They don't do that sort of thing. I don't know if it's the weather. I don't know what impacts it, but people have options here. I remember getting stuck on a freeway for 2 hours one day going to a game and I just thought I was going to die on the freeway. It was brutal getting out there. A lot of people did not go. And listen, the other side of this, they didn't win. They didn't win consistently enough. So if you're not drawing people out to a good product, the location is obviously going to hurt you.
And then a lot of times I felt early on that it was just forced. It's not often you see an ownership transition over and over and over again in a sports franchise, in the Big Four. It's rare when you see a sale. With the Coyotes early on, I think they had 3 to 4 to 5 different ownership groups changing hands until the one guy filed for bankruptcy and the NHL had to come in and run the team and fund it and take over for a few years. Do you think it was just too much too soon that Gary Bettman really wanted to grow the game south? Phoenix was, I think, the 5th or 6th largest population city in the USA. It was a huge market. He wanted to get in there. Or was it just bad management?
I mean, certainly Bettman cares about the Sun Belt experiment. You look at, and I know he doesn't even call it that. He just looks at opportunities in markets that were ripe for expansion. When they looked at the footprint of the other major sports, I've had this conversation with him. The NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball were all in all these markets that the NHL hadn't taken advantage of yet. So they saw potential for growth. And I don't know how you can say it hasn't been a success when you look at all the cup winners that have come in these markets. I hate to say it, since a team in Canada won a cup. So there's been a lot of success in the Sun Belt. Arizona's the holdout, though, right? And I do think it had to do with that location. They knew all along they were getting this sense that they just couldn't make it work revenue-wise in Glendale. You remember the negotiations that were going on with ICE Arizona and Glendale? They were trying to get a lease agreement. It was a 15-year agreement. And they were getting substantial money from the city of Glendale. They needed that money in order to operate in Glendale because their annual losses were so high. So I really, I hesitate to even call it bad management. I just think it was a bad situation. They couldn't survive in Glendale. And after a period of time, Gary Bettman himself realized it when they started crunching the numbers. ICE Arizona told him, there's no way we're going to make it work out here without that lease agreement, which Glendale broke 2 years into the agreement. So I think that's, again, the original sin. That was the problem. And again, they didn't win. Those two things combined just made it really tough on the Coyotes to exist in Arizona.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. The big number that they were losing, like it was upwards of $30 to $40 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
The Coyotes were losing every single year. And as a hockey player who has to make up for that with escrow, it was frustrating for me to have to eat that pill where I gotta pay these owners this money at the end of the season because they need to made whole to be made whole. And in my eyes, what you were in Arizona, you saw the marketing. Was it a lack of growing the game? Because you mentioned these other Sun Belt markets, minor hockey is exploding in all these places. Then you have Austin Matthews come out of the gate and do what he did. Was the minor hockey growing, or was it just a case of, like you said, just bad rink placement?
Yeah, it was definitely exploding. I mean, if you look at USA Hockey statistics over the years, Arizona's always top five or top 10 in growth. Youth hockey's doing very well here. I'm curious to see how it does now that the Coyotes are gone, but there's been immense growth. Mm-hmm. In fact, I wrote a story a couple years ago after talking to USA Hockey, realizing that per capita, Arizona has a greater need for more ice sheets than any other market in the country because there are far too many players in each one of its rinks. So there's no issues with the youth hockey. Again, I think it goes back to lack of success and the location. Now, you can say even that the lack of success came from the location because when you're losing that much money, your ownership group isn't going to spend to put a winning product on the ice. They can't. They're losing too much money. So I don't know. It's a chicken or egg thing, but I think it all goes back to that decision to move to Glendale. Had they built at Los Arcos, I really wonder what the butterfly effect would have been for this franchise.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was, like you said, the first big domino. But there was a chance to reclaim the team, and especially the last few seasons where you had this new ownership group come in, Alex Morello. Everybody was talking positive. All over social media, we're going to build a new rink. We're going to build a new entertainment district. Is it going to be by the airport? Is it going to be in Phoenix? Is it going to be in Scottsdale? A lot of positives coming out of that group. The team is slowly starting to trend in the right direction. You have some good young draft picks. You have a solid foundation from the outside looking in. And then all of a sudden, it just keeps getting pushed back a year. We're going to play at ASU for 2 years. We're going to start building. Now it's 3 years. Then it's four. Then it's just a never-ending date. At what point were you, because you were around it at all times, at what point did you just say, this will never happen? Like, this is just, you know, a fallacy.
I covered that Tempe arena story for a very long time, and I covered it deeply. I was talking to city council members. I was talking to business leaders. I was talking to everybody around that story. Everybody that I talked to said that that was a good deal for the city of Tempe. Business leaders were overwhelmingly in support of it. The city council voted 7-0 in favor of supporting it. I really thought that that was it. That was a good deal. Now, there was obviously some opposition, and I'll get to that in a minute because that's really what derailed this. But when you look at the plans, at that point, everything looked so good. You know, Gary Bettman comes out for the city council meeting. It looks like everything is moving forward with this new arena and the Coyotes are finally going to have a solution. What I was told was the day after the city council voted 7-0 in favor of moving forward with this deal, Alex Morello was asked for $1.5 million more to spend on the campaign. And he said no. He thought that this was a slam dunk. He really thought that this was such a great deal that Tempe was going to vote for it. Didn't really have a sense of who the electorate was going to be, this 50 plus NIMBYs who didn't want anything in their backyard. And so we didn't get going on the messaging right away for the voters. The other side did. And they were very effective. I know they spread a lot of misinformation. There was a lot of outright lies out there, but it was effective campaigning. Convinced people that they were giving tax breaks to a billionaire and they were going to be on the hook when this thing failed. And so because he didn't spend the money, because he's sending his own people door to door to campaign instead of professionals who know what they're doing, they got routed. They really thought they were going to win this. Even up to the night of the election, I got a call from someone with the team saying, "Hey, are you coming to the victory celebration?" And I said, "Are you really that confident this is going to pass?" "Oh, yeah, it's a slam dunk." And then the numbers come in and they got absolutely routed. So it's amazing to me when I look back on this. You know, we talk about the biggest sins, Glendale being one of them. This is number two to me. You're this close to a deal that's going to make you billions of dollars. You go cheap on the campaign? I don't get that at all. Just spend the money, do what it takes to close the deal, and we might be talking about a different story. Instead, I walked out of that meeting that night thinking, it's
so
over.
Who was the group that was pushing back on the development? Was it just like you mentioned the higher tax bracket people who didn't want noise and, you know, a bunch of traffic in their area?
It was the figurehead for it was a former council member, Lauren Kuby, who opposed this deal. The only one, like, I talked to former mayors, former council members, everyone was in favor of this except for Lauren. Now, the no campaign was being funded by an out-of-state union that wanted union workers on the job. And Alex Morello hadn't agreed to use this particular union. He had agreed to use some union labor. I think it was 20% of the entire project was going to build by union labor. So he did have a union piece in this agreement, but he wasn't working with this group. So they spent a ton of money putting out misinformation, running this campaign, and they crushed him. They absolutely crushed him.
So it gets voted down, and that was what, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, when that proposal for Tempe didn't go through?
May 2023.
So what happens after that? Because after that, we get all excited about the next step. We're not done yet. Arizona's not done finding an arena. They have the schematics for a new entertainment district. They're going to buy this land. It's going up for auction. It seemed to me that it was just all smoke and mirrors from Alex Morello and his team and the people at the Coyotes that they're dangling this carrot. Was there any hard substance in that, or was it all just for show?
I don't think it was for show, because they did far too much to be just for show, and they spent money. But when you look at the logistics of securing state trust land, needing the zoning, which I think they knew early on they needed to get it rezoned. Even here, they thought it was zoned for an arena initially when they looked at the land, because there was another project nearby where there was a triple ice sheet youth hockey complex that was supposed to go up. They thought it was the same zoning. But the city of Phoenix told them, no, a triple sheet for youth hockey is not the same as a 17,000 seat arena. So they knew early on in the process, but by the time they learned this, they didn't have enough time to get it done, get this process done, secure that actual permit before Gary Bettman's deadline. He had told them, "I want to know by the end of the season what's happening." So I think what Alex Morello chose to do is, we're going to go ahead with the land auction and then try and work out the zoning afterward. Well, you saw what happened with the Arizona State Land Department. I reported a while back that after talking with City of Phoenix officials, they weren't sure that this development was ever going to happen. So they canceled the auction. And that was the point at which Alex Morello threw up his hands and said, "Okay, we're done. We had worked in good faith with you, but we're realizing now that there's too much opposition." I want to say one more thing on this. When Gary Bettman was out here to announce the sale of the franchise, before they moved to Utah, I think they had a news conference that same day or the next day in Utah. I think the NHL knew at that point that there was a ton of political opposition to the Morellos getting anything done here. He burned bridges everywhere. He didn't build relationships in this city. He didn't have many fans. And I think Gary knew that there was going to be opposition beforehand. I don't know how he knew. I have a suspicion that it came through Marty Walsh, the executive director of the NHLPA, who is the former mayor of Boston, has immense political connections. I think Marty did his homework and found out what the lay of the land was here. I think that got back to the league. So they knew, I think, that this was going to fall through, that this was never going to happen for Alex Morello.
Do you think Are you a fan of Alex Morello? Because you know more than anybody on this issue. Do you think he did everything he could have or should have done to keep this team in Arizona?
No, I mean, I just talked about the campaign and how they failed there. And again, Alex Morello made his money by buying distressed assets. The way you make money with distressed assets is you squeeze your creditors. You say, I'll pay you 60% of what I owe you. Then it becomes a negotiation. So you pay it. You owe less money than you did, and your debt is not what it was. It makes it easier to turn it around. Well, there's no scrutiny of the other industries that he's in. But when you step into the pro sports arena, you've got media coverage watching everything you do. And everybody was aware of how he was operating in the business space and the bridges that he was burning, the relationships that he was not building. So that was a critical failure on his part to not understand that he could not operate the same way that he had in previous business, because this is a public entity. People care about this. They're going to be aware of everything you're doing.
Aside of all of this happening, the last 2 years, playing at the college rink, NHL players being forced to dress in like a storage room. The facilities were terrible. At least when I was there, we had the Gila Arena. It was an NHL rink. You know, we had a decent locker room. The food was okay. It was an NHL rink. This wasn't an NHL rink the last few years. Aside of all of that, Arizona threw together a pretty good season last year. There was a point in the season where everybody thought they might make a run for the playoffs. They were playing good. The young kids were slowly starting to develop. You were around the team. How was all of this impacting them? Because you cannot not hear what's happening with your franchise. The unknown. Are we going to be in Utah? Are we going to go here? Are we going to go back to Canada? What's going on with this franchise? How is that impacting the players?
Yeah, and you would have perspective on this as well. I talked to a lot of players that were going through it, and you get the usual lines. Well, we're blocking it out. Yeah, it stinks that we're in this situation, but it's our job to block out all the noise and go out and perform. Well, that's easier said than done. And I think when we really saw the impact of this back in February when the news came out that Ryan Smith might be pursuing this team. They might be moving to Salt Lake City. The Coyotes had played pretty well to that point. They were in the playoff hunt, and then they went winless in February. It was an epic collapse. And there were other factors there, certainly. But I am, you know, in hindsight, talking to some of the players. In fact, I talked to Sean Durzi, and he admitted, yeah, it really was hard to handle that, to block that out and go about your business when you're not even sure where you're going to be next year. I think people sometimes assume that players are like robots. They just go about their business. They're going to play no matter what. They have families. They have other concerns. There's a lot going on in their lives, just like anybody else's. So yeah, this is going to have an impact. And I do think it had a significant impact. The arena, it was what it was. They knew it wasn't an NHL arena, but as long as it was a temporary solution, they thought it was okay, as long as they knew that they were going to get a new arena. But, you know, when the Tempe vote failed and then you've got this news about Salt Lake, I think it was just a gut punch to the team.
I want to ask some about the current players in the offseason that you guys are having, because you look at the teams around the league that had a busy summer, and this team is right at the top of the list. Arizona, Utah, whatever we want to call them now. So obviously trading for Sergachev and Marino, bolstering that blue line with the addition of Ian Cole on the back end. You bring in Kevin Stenlin, who just won a cup. You re-sign core pieces like Valimaki, Durzi, Hayton. What do all these moves mean? Is this the ownership group and the GM saying, hey, we intend to be a playoff team from this point forward?
I don't know that they intend to be a playoff team quite yet. If you listen to Bill Armstrong, he'll talk about teams coming out of the rebuild in year four, and not a lot of them actually make the playoffs. But this is just a step in the right direction. They wanted to fill in with some veteran pieces to continue to help this core grow. They knew who their core was. But the one big move, obviously, is going out and getting Mikhail Sergachev, because they view him as a number one defenseman, something that they don't have, I don't think, either on the team or in the system, really. Now, you can make your arguments for whether or not he is a number one defenseman. I got all kinds of opinions when I was at the draft in Vegas. But they believe he is, and the price they paid to get him shows it, because, listen, J.J. Mosier was a nice defenseman. To me, he's a second pair guy, though, so you can find those guys. They don't have a lot of depth at their center position. They're still not strong enough, and yet they gave up their top center prospect, Connor Geeky, to go get Sergachev. That tells you what they think of him. Bill Armstrong told me at the end of last season, priority number one was to rebuild the blue line, because it really struggled last season. Well, they've gone out and done that. And if Sergachev pans out, they've got some pieces, especially with what you look, they look at their system having with Simashev, with Maverick Lamoureux, with Artem Duda. They've got a bunch of pieces in their system that will be in the NHL in a couple of years. They like where they are on the blue line. So it's just another building block, in my opinion. I think Bill has been really consistent with sticking with his plan that he stated when he first came in here. This was going to be a total rebuild. It was going to take, he wanted to have four or five drafts, really solid drafts, drafting high. He hasn't abandoned that. That was the mistake that previous GMs or ownership groups made here. They'd say they're going to rebuild, and then a couple years in, you go out and get a Taylor Hall or a Phil Kessel, and everybody's like, what are you doing? You're not ready to compete yet. Bill hasn't done that. He's stuck with the plan. And I think this is the biggest gut punch for Coyotes fans. You finally saw a competent hockey operations staff that was doing it the right way. You saw hope on the horizon, and now they're gone.
Yeah, and you look at the young players in their roster, the real young ones, the 22, 21, 19, whatever, Dylan Gunther, Doan, Michelli, Cooley, Hayton, so many young, talented players, lots to be excited about. When you look at that group, who stands out to you the most? Who do you think, okay, they're all good, but this one in particular could be something special?
The jury is still out for me on Logan Cooley because I think there was an argument to be made that he needed some development time maybe in the AHL, but I think him signing here, a condition of that was that he would not go to the AHL. So I want to see how he develops in year two. He could be a really dynamic player. He has some unbelievable skill. I think we all saw the goal that he scored in Australia in the Global Series and thought, wow, this kid's just going to be electric. We'll see on that one. The guy that has blown me away so far is Dylan Gunther. This kid has an unbelievable attitude. They sent him back to the Dub. They sent him down to Tucson, and he was pissed about it both times, but he didn't sulk. He used it as fuel, and he got better. The Dylan Gunther that we saw last season after he came back from Tucson was a different player. This kid is driven. This kid is a pure goal scorer. I really, really wonder what he will be able to do playing alongside an elite center like Logan Cooley. I really like everything about this kid's game, including, as I said, maybe foremost, his attitude, his approach to the game.
And then one player who obviously has nothing really to prove in terms of being a real star in this league is Clayton Keller. And I was kind of wondering, you know, if he was on a bigger market, if he was in New York or Tampa or something like that, you know, he'd be more of a, he'd just be talked about more. How do you picture him compared to the other stars in the league? Is he a top 12, 15 player? Is he top 20? Like, where does he rank among the top stars?
I don't know, guys. I'd have to go through it and actually do that ranking. He certainly does not get enough attention because he plays in Arizona. And I think you probably saw a lot of the chatter from Maple Leafs fans this summer saying maybe we should go get Clayton Keller, as if it were as easy as waving a magic wand and suddenly Clayton Keller's a Maple Leaf. But he's an elite playmaker. He is a very skilled player. And when you look at the point totals the past two seasons, they're impressive. And I want to point out that he's done that without a true number one center. Barrett Hayton has basically been the number one center on that line. I don't know that Barrett Hayton is even a top six center. He may be that, but he's probably a 3C in this league. And yet Clayton Keller has been putting up the numbers that he's been putting up. That's amazing to me. I wonder what he could do with an elite center.
I'll jump in. What's the biggest void in this lineup? They have decent goaltending. I don't mind the goaltenders. Their defense is sorted out. Is that the next step then? To get this team into contention is to get elite centers. Because you mentioned Logan Cooley. Is he ready yet? We're going to find out. You got Bukestad. He's a solid third-line centerman. I actually like Nick Bukestad a lot. And then there's Barrett Hayton. Where does he fit in? Is that the logical next step for Armstrong to just go shopping for a first-line center?
I think so. They're not easy to get, John, right? They usually don't come available on the market. It's interesting. When you look back at his St. Louis years when Bill was a scout there and then the assistant GM, St. Louis is the team that sort of broke the mold. They went and got Braden Schenn. They went and got a couple of top centers that helped
Ryan
them.
O'Reilly, yeah.
Vegas got Jack Eichel, but those guys normally don't come on the market. They have to be drafted. And that's one of the issues this franchise has always faced. They've never had any lottery luck. I tell people this and they're amazed by this stat. The Coyotes have never drafted in the top two. When you consider how little success they've had, it's astounding that they haven't had a top two pick. And that's where you find those guys, right? But in terms of the needs of this franchise, without question, I talked about the defense already. They drafted three goalies last year that they really feel good about. Plus, they've got Connor Ingram here and Karel Vemelka to a lesser extent. they feel pretty good about their other positions. But when you look at center, you mentioned the guys they have on the NHL club. Their top prospect is Cole Beaudoin, who's probably another third line center. That's how he charts right now. So they desperately need another top six center prospect, which is what they thought Connor Geeky was. That's what they have to address. I don't know how they find it. If you don't get lucky in the lottery, it's really hard to acquire those guys. Certainly not in free agency and difficult via trades.
Well, you mentioned the lottery. You mentioned the draft. They made an interesting pick this year when they picked up Iginla. Obviously has the pedigree. His father, Jerome, played in the league for years and years and years. Hall of Famer. I myself wasn't a fan of the pick. I thought it was a reach. I thought they could have done a little bit better. There was more talent available. What did you think of this pick? They obviously had a need at center. Iginla can play center and wing, mostly known for playing wing. But is that a good pick for the Coyotes or the Utah Hockey Club? What was your thoughts on that pick?
I'm always of the mind that you just wait and see. I don't know. I'm not a trained scout. I don't evaluate these players, and I'm not going to pretend like I am one. I know they were high on Iginla. We'll wait to see a few years down the road if they were right. He certainly has the pedigree. In fact, I have a fun story coming because I talked to Jerome and I talked to Shane Doan, who are both close friends, part owners, obviously, in Kamloops, team up in the WHL. Hmm. They've been friends for a very long time. Now their sons are going to get to play together in Utah, and they barely know each other. I asked Josh about these. Like, I've met Dij once. I don't know him at all. So it's a fun story to have these two families that are just incredible, incredible families. Like, could you get more wholesome than the Doans and the Iginlas? They're going to play together in Utah. Really, really cool story coming.
That's funny. Speaking of Utah now, we talked about it at the beginning of the show or maybe before we came on. What's the ceiling for this group? Because we saw the success they had last year, the dipping their toe in the playoff water, then obviously the collapse near the end of the season, but they've added a lot of pieces. Their defense looks solid, like we talked about. Is this a playoff team? Are they going to take that step to try to push, be one of those bubble teams?
I think the goal for them this season is to be in contention for the playoffs like they were trying to do last year and did until the Salt Lake news came out in February. I don't think this is quite a playoff team yet. I don't think they're quite ready. I don't see it at the center position quite yet, but there are a few things to watch that could alter that. Does Logan Cooley take a major step forward as a center? Does Barrett Hayton recapture who he was at the end of the 22-23 season instead of what we saw last year where he slipped back in play and had an injury that really hurt him? And then is Sergachev really a number one defenseman?
Yeah.
If all those three things pan out, they could be around the playoff bubble. We'll see how that plays out.
And then I think we're obviously a fighting show. I fought when I played for the Coyotes. Is the fact that they don't have anybody tough on this team limiting them? Because they have general punching bag Liam O'Brien, who never wins a fight. Do they need to address that to go out and get someone who can actually maybe win a fight?
I'm curious. I think there are different opinions on that. Listen, I think there are some people that will say, well, you need a guy who can also play. You need a guy who can contribute, not just going to go out there like, just play 3-4 minutes a game and just get into fights. I don't know. There's a lot of disagreement on the role of fighters in today's NHL. They might be making a resurgence. If you watch the New York Rangers, they're big fans back there, obviously. I'm curious. This is a good topic for discussion, in my opinion. I might even write about this, and I might call you, John. I might ask your opinions on this.
In all seriousness, though, you do, with all these young guys and this talent, if you sign them, you have Stenlund's going to be on the fourth line, you have Kerfoot, you have McBain, it's a pretty full roster now. And I do firmly believe you need to have some insurance on these high young guys to someone to protect them. And I do think it's lacking a lot. I know Ian Cole can step up. He was a good addition where he can kind of fill that void. But yeah, we should dig into that, Craig, because it's an interesting topic that I'm definitely accustomed to. And I when I was in Arizona, it was an exciting time. We had Max Domi. We had Anthony Duclair. We had all these young players, and we were very successful until I got traded because Maloney wouldn't stand firm against Gary Bettman when he wanted to get me traded and then exiled to St. John's, Newfoundland. But that's a whole other story. But anyways, is there anything else you'd like to talk about, Craig?
No, I think you guys covered everything. I'm just, the thing that I wanted to maybe point out is there's been a lot of narrative about how quickly the NHL could come back to Arizona. Alice Morello obviously had the five-year negotiating window. That's gone now. It's now just like any other expansion market. That's what Bill Daley told me, the deputy commissioner. A lot of people hope that this can happen in 3 to 5 years. To me, that feels like a pipe dream. Like, this process is so lengthy to get anything done. And any ownership group that comes in here has the same issue that every ownership group has had since Steve Ellman moved the team to Glendale. You don't have an arena in the right part of town. I know a lot of people want them to go back down and play with the Suns owner. Matt Ishbia was not that interested in the Coyotes, certainly not at the price tag. I don't think he's going to pay the price tag for an expansion franchise, at least not now, not until he starts looking for his own new arena. NHL teams can't play in other people's buildings. As I said before, they're too reliant on arena revenue. You have to own the arena, or the owner has to own both teams for you to play in that arena. So anybody that comes in has to get an arena plan, has to have it solidified. It can't be, oh, we think we're going to get this done like this land auction, right? You got to have blueprints. You have to have an agreement in place. That's not easy to do. And as I mentioned earlier, the political climate here makes it even harder. There is very little local support to give any sort of tax breaks whatsoever to sports owners. Those are the hurdles that any new ownership group has to get over before NHL hockey returns to Arizona.
And then they have burned every goodwill aspect they had, I would think, in that area. And then on the other side, like, do they deserve it? Does Arizona deserve a second chance? We obviously, Atlanta's had two chances, maybe going on three. It's such a huge market. Fast forward 20 years, if you were to guess, does Arizona have a hockey team in 20 to 25 years?
I do think NHL hockey will return to Arizona, absolutely. And you mentioned it, just the market size alone and what that can mean for TV rights and possibilities and further growth of this market, which isn't slowing down. The city just keeps getting bigger and bigger. Do they deserve it? I think the fans do. I think the fans supported this team as well as they could have, given all the hurdles, whether it was location or lack of winning. There is a fervent fan base here. And as I mentioned, there's a really robust youth hockey program here in Arizona as well. You just have to put it in the right location, and you have to have competent ownership. Those are two things that have been largely lacking in the long history of this now departed franchise.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe you can be a part of that, Craig. Part of the solution.
How about Shane Doan, buddy? What do you think of that? How about Shane Doan as a face of it?
I think that would go well. That guy, I know him. I played with him. He could run for mayor and win in Arizona. That's the kind of support he gets there. And you won't find a nicer guy. I agree. I agree, Craig. Well, listen, I hope everything goes well with you this year. I hope it works out with the whole Utah transition and you find a sweet spot with that in Arizona and you can continue to be successful, because you're smart, man. Thank you for coming on. We really enjoyed it.
Really appreciate you guys having me. It was great chatting.
Tim, you have anything else?
No, thanks for coming on, Craig. We'll do it again sometime.
Sounds good. Anytime.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. We appreciate the support, and we'll talk to you next time. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.